ॐ विघ्नशमिनन्दस्य जनजनसदकया चक्षुसुमदकान्दिन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः. श्रीचैतन्यमनुविष्टं स्थितां दिनभूतले सायं रूपकदां मह्यं ददति सा फलन्तिकम् पञ्चगौपतुर्भ्यश्च कृपसिन्धुभैव च प्रतिक्षणं भवनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमः. हरि भो The Lord has incarnated as Mohini Murti and has tricked, bewildered, stolen the nectar from the demons and awarded it to the demigods. The verses, the two verses at the end of the previous chapter, chapter 9, explain that the demons and devotees worked equally, yet the demons received nothing, and the devotees received their desired goal. And this was due to the mercy of the Lord. The devotees, in general, if they're actually devotees, whose only ambition is to preach or to please Krishna, Guru Krishna, then they don't remain in the material world, even though they appear to be working in the material world. But this type of detachment, on one hand detachment from matter and attachment to spirit, is quite rare. Spirit means Krishna. It's very rare. That degree of unselfishness is very rare, because the core of our material existence is the false ego, selfishness. So the devotees, by their work, which may appear to be exactly the same externally as the work of non-devotees, achieve completely different results. The non-devotees, by their work, because the core, no matter what their work appears to be good or bad, it's bad in the sense of it entangles one in future births and death. And for devotees, whatever their work appears to be, whether it's humble or glorious, because it frees one from birth and death, it is considered subha, auspicious. And for a non-devotee, everything is considered inauspicious. The rules to determine auspicious and inauspicious, in one sense, are very simple. They are very high and they are absolute. If they remove us from the cycle of death, samsara dhava, nalalita loka, from the cycle of the burning forest fire of death, if they move us in that direction, then they are good. And if they entangle us further, then they're dangerous and bad. Simple definition. So when the demigods took the nectar and the demons got nothing, the demons, of course, were really happy. They were thinking that the demigods are so exalted and we are so fallen, so it is better that they have the nectar. No, they were so angry. They were so angry because how could they possibly tolerate it? Their enemies had gotten the thing that they were striving for. Text 1 of chapter 10. Sukadeva Goswami said, O king, the demons and daityas all engaged with full intention, attention and effort in churning the ocean. But because they were not devotees of Vasudeva, the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, they were not able to drink the nectar. So that's a summary, really, of the lesson. No one who doesn't become a devotee can drink amrit, or immortality. Krishna bhakti nishkam ate eva shanta bhakti mukti siddhi kami shakali ashanta. That was quoted. No peace, what to speak of immortality, for everyone who is a devotee, who is not a devotee, because whatever desires one has, whether it's bhakti mukti or siddhi, they entangle one in the material world. 2. O King, after the Supreme Personality of Godhead had brought to completion the affairs of churning the ocean and feeding the nectar to the demigods who were his dear devotees, and then we heard at the end also, he changed from his form of Mohini Murti into his form of Adita. And the demons saw what had happened. And then he left, in text 2, he left the presence of them all and was carried by Garuda to his own abode. Seeing the victory of the demigods, the demons became intolerant of their superior opulence. So whether you win or lose, you can't win in the material world. There's always fighting. So thus they began to march towards the demigods with raised weapons. Thereafter, being enlivened because of drinking the nectar, the demigods, who are always at the shelter of the lotus feet of Narayan, used their various weapons to counteract the demons in a fighting spirit. O King, a fierce battle on the beach of the ocean of milk, right there on the ocean, by the shore of the ocean. A battle ensued between the demigods and the demons, and this battle was very terrible, and one can, as one will hear it, will hear about it in great detail. It was terrible, but also as wild because of the different carriers that are being used and the way it's fought. The fighting was so terrible that simply hearing about it would make the hair of one on one's body stand on end. Both parties in that fight were extremely angry at heart. Why? Because there was such an enmity, and for a short time the enmity was covered over because of a mutual interest in churning the ocean of milk into the Amrita. But the enmity didn't go away. Enmity is hard to remove. Not just forgetting about it for some time removes enmity. So they had mutual enmity, and they were angry at heart. And in enmity, they beat one another with swords, arrows, and a variety of other weapons. Prabhupada, very short purport. There are always two kinds of men in this universe, not only on this planet, but also in higher planetary systems. All the kings dominating planets like the sun and moon also have enemies like Rahu. One can't avoid enemies. It is because of occasional attacks upon the sun and the moon by Rahu that eclipses take place. The fighting between the demons and demigods is perpetual. It cannot be stopped unless intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. Interesting. Unless the intelligent persons from both sides take to Krishna consciousness. What are the both sides? The devotees and the demons. Okay. Or the devas and the demons. The two sides. The demigods. And the demons. So the demigods, the devotees, they can take to Krishna consciousness. But the demons, how could demons? They're demons by definition. How can they take to Krishna consciousness? But in the eighth canto right here, after hearing the fortune that comes to a devotee because he has Krishna working for him, he gets success. Naturally, one wants to become a devotee and thinks I should become a devotee. But then the question was raised, what if I'm a demon? How can I become a devotee? If I'm an asura, how can I become asura? How can I become a devotee? And this, the pastimes that are going to come up in, not throughout this, the remainder of the eighth canto, but a large portion of it, will show how a demon, namely Bali Maharaj, how he will become a great, great devotee, greater than the demigods, because he'll be a pure devotee. So intelligent persons, regardless of one's situation, should take to Krishna consciousness, because it's intelligent to understand how tiny and powerless one is, and that one should submit to the higher power. And that the highest understanding of the higher power is that higher power is Krishna. That's Krishna consciousness. The sounds of the conch shells, bugles, drums, bheris, and damaris, kettle drums, as well as the sounds made by the elephants, horses, and soldiers. So this is the battle going on. Who were both on chariots and on foot, were tumultuous. On that battlefield, the charioteers fought with the opposing charioteers. The infantry soldiers with the opposing infantry. The soldiers on horseback with the opposing soldiers on horseback. And the soldiers on the backs of elephants with enemy soldiers on elephants. Fighting took place amongst equals. In this way, the fighting took place amongst between equals. Some soldiers fought in the back of camels. Some on the backs of elephants. Some on asses, donkeys. Some on white-faced and red-faced monkeys. Some on tigers. And some on lions. In this way, they all engaged in fighting. O king, some soldiers fought in the back of vultures, eagles, ducks, hawks, and butcher birds. You know what a butcher bird is? I also don't know. Some fought on the backs of timangillas, huge fish, which can devour huge whales. Some on the backs of saravas, I think it's like an antelope. Some on buffalo, rhinoceroses, cows, bulls, jungle cows, and arunas. Others fought on the back of jackals, rats, lizards, rabbits, human beings, goats, black deer, swans, and boars. In this way, mounted on animals of the water, land, and sky, including animals with deformed bodies, both armies faced each other and went forward. I said it was a wild battle. O king, O descendant of Maharaj Pandu, the soldiers of both the demigods and the demons were decorated by canopies, colorful flags and umbrellas with handles made of valuable jewels and pearls. So very, very opulent, because they were such noble personalities. They were further decorated by fans made of peacock feathers and by other fans also. The soldiers, their upper and lower garments waving in the breeze, naturally looked very beautiful. And in the light of the glittering sunshine, their shields, ornaments, and sharp, clean weapons appeared dazzling. Thus the ranks of soldiers seemed like two oceans with bands of aquatics. For that battle, the most celebrated commander-in-chief, Bali Maharaj, son of Rochana, the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj, was seated on a wonderful airplane named Vaihayas. O king, this beautifully decorated airplane had been manufactured by the demon Maya and was equipped with weapons for all types of combat. It was inconceivable and indescribable. Indeed, it was sometimes visible, sometimes not. Seated in this airplane under a beautiful protective umbrella and being fanned by the best of the chamaras, Bali Maharaj, surrounded by his captains and commanders, appeared just like the moon rising in the evening, illuminating all directions. Very effulgent, but not effulgent like the sun whose rays are scorching. Effulgent like the moon, whose waves are cooling and soothing. Surrounding Bali Maharaj on all sides were the commanders and captains of the demons, sitting on their respective chariots. Amongst them were the following demons: Namuchi, Shambarabana, Viprachiti, Ayomuka, Dvimurda, Kalanab, Praheti, Heti, Ilvala, Sakuni, Bhuta, Santapa, Vajra Damstra Virochana Hayagriva Sankushila Kapila Megadundubi Taraka Chakradrik Sumba Nushumba Jamba Utkal Arista Aristanemi Tripuradip Maya, the sons of Paloma, the Kalayas, the Nivatakavachas, and the Nivatakavachas. All of these demons had been deprived of their share of the amrita, of the nectar. And they had shared merely in the labor of churning the ocean. Now they fought against the demigods and to encourage their armies. They made a tumultuous sound like the roaring of lions and blew loudly on conch shells. Balabit, Lord Indra, upon seeing the situation of his ferocious rivals, became extremely angry. Sitting on Airavata, an elephant who can go anywhere and who holds water and wine in reserve for showering, Lord Indra looked just like the rising sun from Udayagiri, where there are reservoirs of water. Text 26. So Indra was mounted upon the elephant that had been arisen from the churning, early in the churning of the ocean of milk. Surrounded by Lord Indra, king of heaven, were the demigods, seated on various types of vehicles and decorated with flags and weapons. Present amongst them were Vayu, Agni, Varuna, and other rulers of various planets, along with their associates. The demigods and demons came before each other and reproached one another with words piercing to the heart. They began to criticize, call each other names, chastise each other, piercing each other's hearts before weapons, words. Then they drew near and began fighting face to face in pairs. O King Balimaraj fought with Indra, Kartikeya with Tarak, Varuna with Hiti, and Mitra with Prahiti. Yamaraj fought with Kalanab, Vishwakarma with Mayadhanava, Trasta with Shambhara, and the sun god with Virochana. The demigod Aparajit fought with Namuchi, and the two Asvini Kumara brothers fought with Vrishapava. The sun god fought with the 100 sons of Maharaj Bali, headed by Bana, and the moon god fought with Rahu. The demigods controlling air fought with Paloma, and Shumba and Ushumba fought the supremely powerful material energy Durga Devi, who is called Bajrakali. So everyone was fighting. Omaj Prickett, suppressor of enemies, Aridham, Lord Shiva fought with Jamba, and Vibhavasu fought with Mahisha Asura. Ilval, along with his brother Vatapi, fought the sons of Lord Brahma. Durmasha fought with Cupid, the demon Utkal, with Matrika demigoddesses, Brihaspati with Sukracharya, Sanaischara Saturn with Narakasura. The Maruts fought Nivatakavach. The Vasus fought the Kalakeya demon. The Vishvadev demigods fought the Paloma demons, and the Rudras fought the Krodashva demons, who are victims of Kroda, or anger. All of these demigods and demons assembled on the battlefield with a fighting spirit, and they attacked each other with great strength. All of them, desiring victory, they fought in pairs, hitting one another severely with sharpened arrows, swords, and lances. They severed one another's heads using weapons like bishundis, chakras, clubs, rishtis, pratashas, shaktis, ulmukas, prashas. I don't know what these are, but they're awful, I'm sure. Once when I was in Jaipur, I went to the... There's a military museum there. You have seen? And there's all kinds of weapons, arrows with things to cut off people's heads, and there's knives that you stick in people that have scissors attached to them that you keep on cutting as you're sticking. Quite interesting. And then there's weapons. One part of the weapon pierces the armor, and then the other part goes through it. So there are all kinds of different weapons, including nistramas, lances, parigas, mudgaras, and bindi palas. The elephants, horses, chariots, charioteers, infantry soldiers, and various kinds of carriers, along with their riders, were slashed to pieces. The arms, thighs, necks, and legs of the soldiers were severed, and their flags, bows, armor, and ornaments were torn apart. Because of the impact on the ground of the legs of the demons and demigods and the wheels of the chariots, particles of dust flew violently into the sky and made a dust cloud that covered all directions of outer space, as far as the sun. But when the particles of dust were followed by drops of blood being sprinkled all over space, the dust cloud could no longer float in the sky. So what a war, what a battle. In the course of the battle, this is text 39, the war field became strewn with the severed heads of heroes, their eyes still staring and their teeth still pressed against their lips in anger. Helmets and earrings were scattered from their severed heads. Similarly, many arms decorated with ornaments and clutching various weapons were strewn here and there, as were many legs and thighs which resembled the trunks of elephants. Many headless trunks were generated on that battlefield. With weapons in their arms, these ghostly trunks, which could see with the eyes in the fallen heads, attacked the enemy soldiers. Maharaj Bali then attacked Indra with 10 arrows and attacked Aravata, Indra's carrier elephants, with 3 arrows. With 4 arrows, he attacked the 4 horsemen guarding Aravata's legs, and with 1 arrow, he attacked the driver of the elephant. Before Bali Maharaj's arrows could reach him, Indra, king of heaven, who was expert in dealing with arrows, smiled and counteracted the arrows with arrows of another type known as Mbhala, which were extremely sharp. You like this monkey?
It's interesting.
Yes, especially headless personalities walking around with weapons. That's great. Why don't we do this as a drama in the next Sunday feast? It'll be exciting. With audience participation and everything. Something Alan could get right into. When Bali Maharaj saw the expert military activities of Indra, he could not restrain his anger. Thus he took up another weapon, known as Shakti, which blazed like a great firebrand. But Indra cut that weapon to pieces while it was still in Bali's hand. Thereafter, one by one, Bali Maharaj used a lance, prash, tomara, rishtis, and other weapons. For whatever weapon he took up, Indra immediately cut them to pieces. My dear king, Bali Maharaj then disappeared and resorted to demoniac illusions. This also happened when Dhruva Maharaj was fighting with the Rakshasas high in the Himalayan mountains after his brother Uttam had been killed. He was defeating them, and they resorted to different types of illusory actions, demoniac illusions. Suddenly, after Bali Maharaj disappeared, a great mountain generated from illusion then appeared above the heads of the demigod soldiers. From that mountain fell trees blazing in a forest fire. Chips of stone with sharp edges like picks also fell and smashed the heads of the demigod soldiers. Scorpions, large snakes, and many other poisonous animals, as well as lions, tigers, boars, and great elephants all began falling upon the demigod soldiers, crushing everything. Oh my king, many hundreds of male and female carnivorous demons, meat-eating demons, flesh-eating demons, completely naked and carrying tridents in their hands, then appeared, crying the slogans, "Cut them to pieces, pierce them." Fierce clouds, harassed by strong winds, then appeared in the sky, rumbling very gravely with the sound of thunder. They began to shower live coals. A great devastating fire created by Bali Maharaj began burning all the soldiers of the demigods. This fire, accompanied by blasting winds, seemed as terrible as the Samvartaka fire which appears at the time of dissolution. Thereafter, whirlpools and sea waves, agitated by fierce blasts of wind, appeared everywhere before everyone's vision. And a furious flood, as if the fire wasn't bad enough. Then the floods came. Well, this magical atmosphere in the fight was being created by the invisible demons who were expert in such illusions. The soldiers of the demigods became morose. O king, when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, what did they do? Yes, because that's the nature of people in general. And this is pious people. When things are going well, they rely upon their own abilities and strengths. But when those abilities and strengths, whatever they are, prove to be insufficient, as they will do for everyone at the time of death or prior to the time of death, then if one is pious, chatur vita bhajante mam jana sukhitino adana they take shelter of Krishna. So when the demigods could find no way to counteract the activities of the demons, they wholeheartedly meditated upon the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the creator of the universe, who then immediately appeared to the rescue. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, whose eyes resembled the petals of a newly blossomed lotus, sat on the back of Garuda, spreading his lotus feet over Garuda's shoulders, dressed in yellow, decorated by the Kastuba gem and the goddess of fortune, and wearing an invaluable helmet and earrings. The Supreme Lord, holding various weapons in his eight hands, became visible to the demigods. As the dangers of a dream cease when the dreamer awakens, the illusions created by the jugglery of the demons were vanquished by the transcendental prowess of the Supreme Personality of Godhead as soon as he entered the battlefield. Indeed, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all dangers. So although we may not be able to participate in such a extravagant battle and scene as being described in this chapter of the Bhagavatam, we still nevertheless from time to time reach the limit of our own abilities and find ourselves in danger. And indeed, this verse, text 55, ends, simply by remembrance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one becomes free from all danger. So therefore, although no one likes danger and difficulty, because danger and difficulty for a pious person caused him to take shelter of the Lord, danger and difficulty are even better than success in that sense. Because again, what is good and bad is measured by what gets us out of the material world, not by what entangles us in the material world. So a devotee, his trust is that he's always in the hands of Krishna. So therefore he accepts everything that happens to him as good, whether it superficially appears good or bad. Because in every case, good or bad, a devotee will actually remember Krishna. He'll see, oh, Krishna has sent this. So remembrance of the Supreme Personality of God, one becomes, brings one freedom from danger. Has anyone ever had experience of that? No one? Have you ever had an experience like that? No. Maybe you haven't reached the limit of your abilities yet, but some of us have. I certainly have on many, many occasions. When you can't think of anything that you can possibly do to save yourself by your own ability, and you remember Krishna, and although the external circumstances may not change, although so many times they do change, still, there is an inner peace to know that you are not on your own. Once? Only once? Where? No, wait, is this going to have a Krishna conscious ending to it? Oh, yes. Yeah, I can imagine if he's square, because he was probably quite serious. Sincerity. Well, you're going to tell us what happened? Did he kill you? Yeah. Fortune favors the bold. Oh, king, when the demon Kalanemi, who was carried by a lion, saw that the Supreme Personality of Godhead, carried by Garuda, was on the battlefield, the demon immediately took up his trident, whirled it, and discharged it at Garuda's head. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Hari, the master of the three worlds, immediately caught the trident, and with the very same weapon he killed the enemy, Kalanemi, along with his carrier, the lion. Thereafter, two powerful, very powerful demons named Mali and Sumali were killed by the Supreme Lord, who severed their heads with his disc. Then Malyavan, another demon, attacked the Lord. With his sharp club, the demon, who was roaring like a lion, attacked Garuda, the Lord of the birds, who are born from eggs. But the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the original person, used his disc to cut off the head of that enemy also. Thus then the Bhaktivedanta purports of the 8th canto, 10th chapter of the Srimad Bhagavatam, entitled The Battle Between the Demigods and the Demons. But it wasn't over yet. Chapter 11. Sukadeva Goswami said, thereafter, by the supreme grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Hari, all the demigods headed by Indra and Vayu were brought back to life. Being enlivened, so talking about a difficult situation, they were dead already. And they couldn't, because they were dead, they couldn't pray to the Lord. But yet, he brought them back to life. Indra, all the demigods headed by Indra and Vayu were brought back to life. Being enlivened, the demigods began severely beating the very same demons who had defeated them before. When the most powerful Indra became angry and took his thunderbolt in hand to kill Bali Maharaj, the demons began lamenting, alas, alas. Sober and tolerant and well equipped with paraphernalia for fighting, Bali Maharaj moved before Indra on the great battlefield. He moved before him, in front of him. King Indra, who always carries the thunderbolt in his hand, rebuked Bali Maharaj as follows. Indra said, "Oh, rascal! As a cheetah sometimes binds the eyes of a child and takes away his possessions, you are trying to defeat us by displaying some mystic power, although you know that we are the masters of all such mystic power." But actually it was Krishna who was saved the day, it wasn't them. Krishna was Yogeshwar, the master of all mystic powers. Those fools and rascals who want to ascend to the upper planetary systems by mystic powers or mechanical means, who endeavor to cross even the upper planets and achieve the spiritual world or liberation by their own means, I cause to be sent to the lowest regions of the universe. Prabhupada says in his purport, from this statement of Indra, it appears that anyone attempting to go to the higher planetary systems by mechanical means, which are here called Maya, is condemned to go to the hellish planets in the lower portion of the universe. Indra continued, because the demons wanted to ascend to the higher planetary systems, and indeed they're going to take over later on. And indeed, they're going to be sent to hell by the Lord himself. Indra's words will prove true.
Today, Indra says, with my thunderbolt, which has hundreds of sharp edges, I, the same powerful person, shall sever your head from your body. Although you can produce so much jugglery, through your illusion, you are endowed with a poor fund of knowledge. Now, try to exist on this battlefield with your relatives and friends. Bali Maharaj replied, all those present on this battlefield are certainly under the influence of eternal time. And according to their prescribed activities, they are destined to receive fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another. So Indra is saying, I, the same powerful person, will now kill you. And Bali Maharaj, the demon, is saying, everything is under the hands of time, which is actually a representative of the Lord. So according to one's time, according to the karma, according to one's fate, according ultimately to the will of the Lord, one will receive one's destiny. So you may kill me if it's my destiny. One achieves fame, victory, defeat, and death, one after another. Success, failure, success, failure, fame, health, injury, success, failure, misery, happiness, according to one's karma. This is Bali Maharaj, actually an exalted personality, because after all he is the grandson of Prahlad Maharaj. It's Prabhupada's purport. If one is victorious on the battlefield, he becomes famous. And if one is not victorious but is defeated, he may die. Both victory and defeat are possible, whether on such a battlefield as this or on the battlefield of the struggle for existence. Everything takes place according to the laws of nature. Prakriti kriyamana nigunai kamani sarvasha. Since everyone without exception is subject to the modes of material nature, whether one is victorious or defeated, he is not independent, but is under the control of material nature. So Prabhupada is explaining that Indra's desire to kill Bali Maharaj, it will be successful only if Krishna sanctions it. And it's the time, the appropriate time for such a death to take place. And Bali Maharaj, therefore, was very sensible. He knew that the fighting was arranged by eternal time, and under time's influence, one must accept the results of one's own activities. Therefore, even though Indra threatened that he would now kill Bali Maharaj by releasing the thunderbolt, Bali Maharaj was not at all afraid. This is the spirit of a Kshatriya. This is that Kshatriyas have knowledge, different kind of knowledge than a Brahmana, but their knowledge is realized. They don't have so much Shastric knowledge in one sense, because the Brahmana spends his time studying and teaching like that. But they have realized knowledge. These are the kind of knowledges that they realize. They realize practically that they're not their body. And therefore, on the battlefield, they can be fearless. Because they know that if I die, the body dies, but the soul will be elevated, because it's glorious to die in the battlefield doing one's duty. One is a Kshatriya, a warrior. So therefore, they could fight without fear, because their realization was so deep. And it because their realization was so deep, therefore they were elevated to the heavenly planets, to the sun planet. Even by dying in the battlefield. So that is the spirit of a Kshatriya, yujyachapapalayanam, Bhagavad Gita 18:43. A Kshatriya must be tolerant in all circumstances, especially on the battlefield. Thus Bali Maharaj asserted that he was not at all afraid of death, although he was threatened by such a great personality as the King of Heaven. Okay. The next verse has a long purport, and Bali Maharaj is going to speak some more philosophy to Indra. So we'll stop here.